The first of four streetcar vehicles is about to arrive in Kansas City. How will the streetcar change our interactions with downtown? What changes are needed to keep everyone safe and enjoy the riding experience? These issues and more are covered on Transit Talk on Radioactive Magazine. I'm Janet Rogers of Transit Action Network. We are a Kansas City Regional Transit Advocacy Group, fighting for riders, improved and expanded transit, and the cost-effective use of public money for transit. If you want additional information, go to the website at transactionkc.com. I'm speaking with Tom Guerin, Executive Director of the Kansas City Streetcar Authority. Tom has extensive experience in transit. Previous to this position, he was the Assistant Director of Transportation at Mid-America Regional Council for 8 years. So he's well known and appreciated in the Kansas City transit circles. Tom, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Janet.
Tom, I know it's a big change from working at MARC to being the first director of the Streetcar Authority. So what's been your biggest personal challenge so far?
Well, that's a good question. There's been a few. Obviously, the change from really a planning policy environment to an implementation environment is obviously a very different sort of operation. And the visibility around the streetcar project, I think, creates, obviously, and brings with it a whole nother level of pressure with regards to, obviously, making sure we're doing what we're supposed to be doing on the streetcar front. So those are all things I fully expected. They're all things I considered deeply as I contemplated taking on this opportunity. And I would have never done it if I didn't believe that this wasn't going to be great for downtown, that it wasn't going to be great for transit in the broader Kansas City metropolitan region. So it's been a good move.
Well, I think everybody's glad you've taken on the position. So let's start with a basic description of the streetcar system. It's a 2-mile streetcar route. So can you describe to our listeners where it goes?
Sure. I'm starting at Union Station, which will be the southern terminus of the streetcar route. It travels essentially north and south through our downtown core. So starting at Union Station on the south, it goes through the Crossroads Arts and Innovation District, through the downtown loop adjacent to the Power and Light District and Sprint Center on Main Street, through the central business core and the north loop, and then ultimately to the River Market, and it circles the River Market on the north end on 5th and 3rd Streets before coming back south on Main, following the same route to Union Station.
And so the northern terminus is at 3rd and Grand, right?
Essentially, yes. It really is. There really is one terminus point, and that is Union Station, and then it will operate in a loop on the north side prior to coming back south to Union Station.
So how many stations will there be, and how far apart are they?
So we will have 16 total station stops on the route. Many of them will be configured in pairs. So if you think about, for instance, at Crossroads and at 19th Street, we'll have a northbound and a southbound platform on the east and the west sides of the street. That's two station stops, respectively, not one. And so we will have them spaced about every two blocks through the route, give or take. The River Market is a little bit different because it's the one area where we have a one-way loop, essentially, and we have three stops in the River Market on 5th Street, on 3rd and Grand, and then the third on Delaware.
Okay, so anyone who's been downtown lately will have noticed these big ramps on the sidewalks at the streetcar stations. Not everyone knows why we need these ramps, so what's going on?
Sure. Well, what you're seeing is the construction and the completion of construction of our 16 streetcar stop platforms. And those are the platforms that allow us to really extend the sidewalk and to build a raised platform that will provide level boarding to our streetcar vehicles. So those are ADA compliant access ramps that will allow, you know, people with disabilities and in wheelchairs, in strollers, etc., to access the raised portion of the platform, where you'll be able to walk on and roll on to the streetcar at what we call level boarding, which is at an equal elevation with no steps, no big gaps to have to walk over. So it makes for a really quick boarding and deboarding process for our passenger.
And when you talk about boarding and deboarding, mm-hmm. Everybody just goes in and out at any of the doors. There's multiple doors.
That's correct. The streetcars have four doors on both sides. And so at any given station stop, one side of four sets of those doors will be open. And people can use any of them. The two middle doors will be the fully level access doors. And those are the two big double doors. that will really be the place for the boarding of wheelchairs, bicycles, and strollers, as well as general public. And then the two end doors will require a little bit of a step down, but other passengers can use those as well.
And now, I love this choice, but why is a streetcar going to be free to ride?
Well, it was really a decision of the streetcar authority, which is made up of representatives of the Transportation Development District and businesses and property owners and residents. And the decision was really about how do we make the most of the investment? How do we encourage ridership? And a big goal of the streetcar was to promote economic development, which we'll probably talk more about. But I think it was clear that removing the fare really removes an impediment to use of the system, and it really encourages people to get on the streetcar and explore downtown. What we're thinking about is a really more expanded downtown. We think streetcar is going to help to redefine how people view our downtown core, because they'll be able to hop on this anywhere along the alignment and explore really for free the entirety of the River Market, the Crossroads, as well as the downtown loop, whereas in the past maybe they would just visit one of those or two of those locations. Now they'll have access to all of them.
Okay, so right now, because the streetcar is only 2 miles mm-hmm. long, it also makes sense to make it free because nobody's going to want to pay a fare for such a short distance. But if you extend the streetcar at some point, will that change the fare policy?
Well, we would definitely have a conversation at that point in time about the economics of a fare. I think our board really looked at the cost of collecting and enforcing a fare, and you'd be amazed at how much money that is collected from fares are actually used to enforce the fares and the equipment to collect the fares and the process to administer the fare collection process in general. And the view was, you're right, with a short alignment, with the short trip lengths, that a fare doesn't make sense, but it may make more economic sense as we think about an expanded system.
Yeah, I always have a problem, even with the bus system, the cost of collection seems exorbitant. Sometimes I wish every public transit situation was free. Now, the streetcar can't function on the streets like a bus. So what's going to happen when there's a problem?
Well, obviously, a big part of what we're doing right now is developing policies and procedures for how the streetcar will operate. And those policies and procedures take into account what happens if a car or a delivery vehicle is blocking the track. What happens in an emergency if there's a non-streetcar related accident at an intersection? And how will we respond to those incidents? Clearly, you're right. The streetcars are on a track. They don't have a steering wheel. Can't, just turn around or move a block over. And so we need to have processes and procedures in place to, one, inform the riding public and the folks who are riding the system what's happening, and to also expedite resolving those issues as quickly as we possibly can. And this is dealt with in systems across the country. So it's going to be a little bit of a learning experience, we know, for people downtown, for people who aren't used to, as most of our city is not, used to having rail transit in the streets. And so that's part of our public education process, is to really educate people about how it's going to work and how to be safe around the system and what we're going to do in those instances where things aren't working well and we need to adapt.
So if somebody does decide to park in the streetcar's lane, have fines already been developed for that?
They have been, and an ordinance has been passed by the city council that went into effect the 1st of July of this year, in fact, and now active enforcement is underway. And what we're really referring to is the park within the lines ordinance. You will see as we're completing our milling and overlaying of the streets to make for a smooth, nice surface, there's a final striping configuration and signage that's being installed to really tell people park within the lines, make sure you provide the streetcar adequate space for passing. And the consequences for not doing that are tickets and potentially vehicles being towed if ultimately they're blocking the trackway and the streetcars can't pass.
Yeah, it's going to be a very big learning experience for everybody in Kansas City. Mm-hmm. Making sure that they park correctly so they don't impede the progress of the streetcar. So is everything still in place for us to receive the first streetcar vehicle on October 29th? And when will we get to see it in action?
Yes, so I'm happy to report we are still on track for the 29th, the arrival on the 29th. Because of the complexities of the delivery, there's always a chance that it slides a little bit, one way or another, a day or some hours here or there, but we are on track for receiving the car at that time. The very next week, actually, we are planning on having the vehicle out on the streets with a tow truck, where we will actually be towing the vehicle unpowered through the system to check things like clearances with station platforms, clearances with overhead wires, and other systems tests that are needed to be done before we actually power it up under its own power. But the public will see it probably being escorted from time to time down Main Street and through downtown as early as the first week in November.
Good. Now, we do understand the system needs to be tested. There's overhead wires and tracks and substations for powering the vehicles and now, of course, the vehicles. We keep hearing that testing takes a long time. Why is that?
Well, there's a few reasons why. First is this is a complicated operation, and as you indicated, there's lots of moving parts. But another reason is that we don't get all of our streetcars at one time. You'll see one car come on the 29th, but then ultimately they come as they come off the production line. So we'll have a second car by the end of the year, and then the third and fourth shortly thereafter. And obviously to do a full testing of the system and to simulate the operations of service, which will require three cars, we have to have three cars in town. And so there'll be some time before we have three vehicles in town to be able to complete that test. The other part of it is there's lots of training. Obviously, we're building effectively a new organization, and we're hiring new people, so mechanics and operators. And there's a training process, and there's training requirements that we have to go through to make sure that our operators are trained on the system and that they're familiar with the route, that their mechanics are also trained on the technology. We can maintain the system. And all of those things take time with the vehicle, with the route, with the corridor, to make sure we have the people in place and that we've worked out all the issues. So it really is a combination of those things. And to put on top of that, there really is a series of detailed federal requirements that in boxes that we have to check to make sure that the system truly is safe for public service. I think everybody would acknowledge we want to do this right. It's been a long time coming. Everybody's excited to get it here, but we also it's of the utmost importance that it's safe for the riding public before we open. And so we're going to make sure that's the case.
So what's our estimated opening for the first riders?
It really is still too early to tell. I know there's a rush we're still targeting early 2016, and we think we can make that happen. But as I indicated, our vehicle delivery dates for cars 3 and 4 are still in flux. We're still pushing the manufacturer to speed those up. And those will, in part, be a big determining factor around when we're going to be open for service. So we will see. I think as we get cars 2 and 3 in town, we're going to have much more clarity on how testing's going, how we're proceeding through the federal process, and what an opening date potentially looks like.
Okay, so let's look at what we need to think about for safety. We've talked a little bit about it, but you've already implemented a safety campaign with several signs trying to get everybody educated about what they need to know. But just not even with riding the streetcar, but just interacting with it. So what are those major concerns?
So there's really three groups that we're targeting with our safety education campaign. One is automobiles. Clearly, not everybody knows that the streetcar will actually operate in the street in a lane of traffic. And so people who are driving downtown for the first time may not know that they can drive on top of the track slab in the lane that the streetcar is operating. And so, and how to do that safely. It really will act very much like a bus in the downtown environment, and we're indicating that people should treat it that way. The second is bicyclists. Obviously, the embedded tracks in the street are a new component to our built environment in downtown. And we have new bike lanes, we have new bike routes being installed, and it's important that we're communicating how to interact with the streetcar tracks if you're a bicyclist. And we're encouraging people to cross tracks at 90 degrees, to not ride on the track slab or not ride parallel to the tracks, because wheels can get stuck in the track flange and cause you to fall. So that's definitely a safety consideration that we're wanting to educate folks on. And then the third group is really the pedestrians. And this will be more of a focus once the cars arrive. But clearly, the importance of using crosswalks, obeying traffic signals, paying attention, right? We've got a lot of distracted walking with earbuds and cell phones and texting that all pose potential safety risks, as people may not be paying attention. And we've got very quiet streetcars operating on the streets in close proximity to where lots of pedestrian activities are. So those are all the things that are right part of a complex urban environment. And so we're pushing out safety messaging, and we will be rolling out some videos and a new website by the end of the month at kcstreetcar.org that we would encourage people to look at.
Well, that'll be good. Yeah, everybody needs to watch those videos, because what he's talking about with bicycles particularly is really true. I know a couple of people already that have fallen down because they've gotten their bicycle wheels caught in the streetcar tracks. And somebody told me the other day that in Portland, the major reason that people have their bikes in the shop is because they've gotten mangled in the streetcar tracks. So it's really important to watch those videos and learn how to interact properly with the streetcar. Now, let's talk a little bit about actually riding the streetcar. I understand there's only about 32 seats on the vehicle, and it's longer than a max bus. So most people are expected to stand. Why are there so few seats?
Well, there's a few reasons for that. One, because the center part of our vehicle is really configured to be, there's fold-down seats that aren't permanent seats, but they're fold-down, so it provides a very open place for wheelchairs and for bicyclists and for strollers. And so we wanted to make sure we could accommodate all users and have space appropriately. The other and bigger reason, frankly, is that our, as you indicated, our route is 2 miles long. And so we think our average trip length will be very short. So people will be on this for a shorter period of time than you would a traditional commuter transit route or a longer transit route where you might be taking, you know, a commuter trip from home to work and really have a need to sit down because of the time and the duration. So, and then lastly, the seating configuration is adaptable. So if we were ever to expand the service in the future and have longer trips, longer routes to UMKC in the Plaza or elsewhere, we'd be able to reassess and make a determination. Do we need more seats or do we need less seats? And adapt accordingly. But for the downtown circulator service, as it will exist, we think the combination of flexible space that can allow standing room and higher capacities with still a decent number of seats is the right starting point.
You are listening to Transit Talk on Radioactive Magazine on 90.1 FM KKFI Kansas City Community Radio. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network. You can find us at transactionkc.com, follow us on Twitter, or like us on Facebook. I'm speaking with Tom Guerin, Executive Director of the Kansas City Streetcar Authority. Tom, to get back to the other things we need to know about riding it, I know that some transit advocates have expressed concern about having enough poles or straps to hang on to, since most people are going to need to stand. So what is that situation? Like, I'm pretty short, and I can rarely reach straps.
Sure. No, that's it's a good question, and there's going to be a number of what we call stanchions that are built in, which have multiple handles for people to hold on to. Also, on the top of every one of our seats is a nice hold grab bar at a lower height, and we will have the traditional straps hanging from rails. So there's a combination of hold points with the vertical stanchions, the horizontal stanchions on the backs of all of our seats, as well as the straps. And so, again, those are things that are adaptable in the future, but there are a number of them that have been installed and will be a part of the initial configuration.
Okay, now since riding the streetcar is free, what are you doing about anyone who decides to just stay on it all day long?
Yeah, so we will have a process, and it really is in part dictated by some federal requirements, but when we get to the end of line at Union Station, where we're going to have our layover points, we will be requiring everybody to deboard the cars at that time. And so that doesn't mean people couldn't get off, wait until the vehicle's opened again and get back on and go for another trip. That's entirely possible for people to do. But there will be a process that requires everybody after every trip to offboard the car. So people just can't sit on the vehicle all day long. We also are working with the Kansas City Police Department, and we'll have off-duty police support in conjunction with the existing downtown patrol support and downtown council ambassadors and other security presence along the route throughout.
Okay, you talked about level boarding before, which is really good for wheelchairs and bicycles and strollers, but there's no bike rack on the front of the streetcar like there is on a bus. So what do they do with that bike when they get onto the streetcar?
So really, they roll it on and they hold on to it as they sit down.
Okay.
And again, this is something that this is all new to downtown. Our route's only 2 miles. So how many bikes will be on the vehicles are still a little bit of a question. Most people who are on a bike are going to ride it a half mile. Maybe they'll ride it downhill and they'll take the streetcar uphill is one very likely scenario. So we will be looking at that. We have an option to put bike racks on hangers. We've seen those not work so well in other places where you have to raise bikes up and they're swinging them around and there's crowds of people. That poses some challenges and some safety concerns. So we really wanted to try a more simplistic approach, allowing people to roll their bikes on, sit with them in the open areas where we have fold down seats, or stand and hold on for, you know, for a short distance. But clearly we will be assessing how that is all working from a policy perspective after we're open and operational for some time.
And I know another really important facet is wheelchairs. Normally on a bus, the bus driver gets up and ties down the wheelchairs. That's not going to happen here. The wheelchairs are not going to be tied down. So how is it going to be safe for wheelchair users?
Yeah, so first of all, this is one of the things that maybe those close to the project are the most excited about. We've talked about level boarding, but what that really means is even in other rail systems and other streetcar systems, it's very common for wheelchair users to have to hit a button to deploy a ramp to cover a small gap or distance. Our vehicles being completely level boarding eliminate that need. And so there's no deployment of a supplemental ramp or what they call a bridge plate, and you can literally just ride right on and right off. And there is a designated space for wheelchairs. The vehicle speeds and the ride quality is such that really straps beyond the traditional, you know, wheel brakes that we're obviously encouraging folks to use once on board are sufficient for providing. And again, this is typical for what we see in rail systems around the country.
Now, I called Portland mm-hmm. to talk to them to find out what they do when I mm-hmm. first heard this. And what they told me, that one of the things people have to think about is streetcars do not weave in and out of traffic mm-hmm. like a bus does. So you're not going to be thrown side to side. You're going to go straight. Mm-hmm. And when they go around corners, which again, people would think that would be risky, streetcars go very slowly. So there's not enough motion there to really cause a problem for the wheelchairs either if the wheels are locked. And I think you've got some handrails, too, to hold on to.
We do.
Yeah, if someone felt like mm-hmm. they needed it. Okay, let's get to the tough parts. One of the main complaints against a streetcar is that it isn't light rail. So let's address some of the reasons for these people's concern. For instance, they say streetcars are too slow compared to light rail.
Yeah, I'm glad you're giving me an opportunity to address this question. Actually, if you were to look at light rail systems around the country, and whether that's in Denver or Dallas or Minneapolis, it's very common for these systems, when they get into downtown cores, to operate at less than 15 miles an hour and to stop every two blocks, just like our streetcar will be doing. It's not until those systems get outside of the downtown core and they have longer distances with dedicated right-of-way where they reach higher speeds. And so they're building lots of infrastructure for dedicated lanes, for larger platforms, that really is still, from a performance perspective on most light rail systems, operating very similarly to that of a streetcar. And so we've designed ours to, one, acknowledge that, to not embed a bunch of additional costs that really don't provide much in the way of additional benefits, and still leave the door open as we look at expansion opportunities for this to operate very much like a light rail system outside of downtown, with higher speeds, with greater distances between stops. And so we're not precluding that operation in the future with this system. We're simply starting with a small piece because that's where we needed to start, right, to get some momentum and to actually take some action and find a project that was implementable and that would be successful on its own. So I think we're very confident that the streetcar is the right solution for downtown. It fits within the context of downtown. Much of what we're doing with this project is creating an environment that's not just transit friendly, but that's pedestrian friendly. And that means fewer travel lanes. That means more pedestrian areas, bump outs, pedestrian amenities. And that all fits within the broader context of the environment and the development and the activity and the vitality that we're trying to interject into downtown with the streetcar operation. And the streetcar is the right mode to do that. If we were looking at light rail, we're looking at dedicated space. We're looking at more space than we have on Main Street, frankly, unless you're taking cars off of it entirely. So you're moving the bigger streets like Grand, and you're still looking at a major impacts and much more costly solutions from an infrastructure perspective.
So if you eventually want to run this like light rail, mm-hmm. how fast will these modern streetcars go that we're getting?
These cars will go over 40 miles an hour and 45 to 50 miles an hour on the upper end. which is what you'll find light rail systems operating at during peak. So again, I was down in Houston, and through an interesting, you know, through a cool app on the phone, you can track average speeds. The light rail system in Houston is averaging less than 20 miles an hour, well less than 20 miles an hour for the duration of it. So there's a lot of emphasis on mode, but really it's about performance. It's about operating characteristics, and it's about what's the goal of the system. And again, I think we think that the solution for downtown really aligns well with our goals for downtown. And as we think about expansion, there's some opportunities for those goals to evolve, and maybe they look differently if the route is 6 miles or 7 miles long than if it's just 2 miles in the heart of downtown.
Well, the other thing people complain about is, well, light rail carries a whole lot more people because they usually have 3 or 4 cars.
Mm-hmm. Well, clearly that's true. I mean, the light rail can have 3 or 4 cars coupled together as opposed to just one vehicle. And as we're looking at our options, one streetcar vehicle can hold approximately 150 people, which is a significant number. And your options are you move to light rail and you lengthen that, so 150 to 400, or we can just run streetcars more frequently. So we can have a similar capacity, but with a more frequent headway and frequency, which from a rider perspective is actually preferable because it decreases your wait time and it gives you more options. And so again, the other part of this, aside from the space, is those long light rail trains take up lots of room. And so as you think about where you put a station stop that's not 80 feet long, but 300 feet long and is greater than a city block, right? Are we closing streets? Are we not stopping nearly as often as we will be able to with the streetcar? Where do you put those, that size of stop? Where can the streetcars actually stop without fouling intersections and traffic? It's one of the things that was determined really early that would be hard to do outside of just the general space. The stop availability for how you would actually be able to implement a light rail system more fully.
Well, Tom, I think this is a lot of exciting information. I don't think a lot of people in Kansas City have really conceptualized what's going to happen when this streetcar is on the streets. So it's going to be fun to see how everybody learns to interact with the streetcars and enjoy the ride that they're going to get. I'd like to thank Tom Guerin for talking with me and wish him and the streetcar a lot of success. I'm Janet Rogers with Transit Action Network, and you can contact me at transactionkc@gmail.com.